This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Ted Genoways is the editor of the Virginia Quarterly Review, the award-winning editor at the award-winning VQR, online at vqronline.org, published by the University of Virginia since when? Since like the 20s, right?
Yeah, since 1925.
What was the original vision? It was one of the first great literary magazines of America, right?
It was, and the whole idea originally was that it would be a national journal of literature and discussion, and at the time, you know, you think about 1925, that was an ambitious thing for a university-based journal to try to do. And they really were insistent that they didn't want it to be just a southern regional magazine. They wanted it to be something that was really broad in its scope.
Yeah. Back when most people read, I guess, let me be blunt, most Americans did sit down and read, you know, these type of magazines, and they were the successful, weren't they? I mean,
yeah, well, to be fair, it was much more of a print culture at the time.
I mean, yes.
You know, radio as a mass medium was still sort of in its infancy, and obviously TV and the internet weren't around as competition, and so magazines and newspapers were how you got your news and how you got your sources of opinion. And so, yeah, a journal like this was able to be actually rather influential, even with it still had a relatively small readership at the time. But
it was very important. Yeah.
Yeah.
Important people read this. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what they're doing again under your leadership as the editor at the VQR and the work that you're doing there. And that's certainly been recognized by your peer group, the folks who make magazines, the Atlantic Monthly, the New Yorker. I mean, recognizing that the VQR at the University of Virginia is once again one of the top literary magazines in the nation, and something that, you know, people in the know pick up and read. I mean, the word has gotten out.
Yeah, well, we certainly hope so. We've been working at it. And you're right. I mean, it does seem that there's some acknowledgement that what we're doing is worth paying attention to.
So this latest issue that I'm holding in my hand here is the Winter 2010 issue. It came out just a few weeks ago. And every issue that you produce now has a theme.
Right.
You know, broadly speaking, and this issue is about North Africa. Why North Africa?
Well, it's funny. This issue started originally as an issue about the Horn of Africa, that we were interested in what was going on in Somalia. And
for those who don't know, the Horn of Africa is on the east side, right?
Exactly. And it's gotten a lot of attention for the pirates that are there and the discussion of it as a failed state. And again, when there was the Christmas Day attempt on, the airline, when it turned out that this would-be terrorist was trained in Yemen just across the Gulf from Somalia, there was sort of a tension again on that region. And that's what originally attracted us to that place. Partly the fact that Somalia's, as a country, it is a failed state. There's basically no central government. The place is entirely run by warlords. But we were also intrigued by the fact that Somaliland, one of the regions within Somalia, is attempting to split away and is hoping to not only become an autonomous nation, but a democratic nation. And so that seemed like a...
It's pretty courageous for that part of the world.
Absolutely. It seemed like a positive story and an underreported story from this region. And to be sure, there are major obstacles. I mean, the cover photograph is this sort of amazing image of one of the guys who's in the Somaliland Coast Guard, and you know, the guy's draped with you know, a bullet belt and has, you know, a gigantic machine gun.
The gun's almost as big as he is.
Exactly. And but at the same time, when you look at the story, it turns out that there's a handful of these boats, and that they're responsible for hundreds of miles of coastline. And the reality is that there's not much that Somaliland can do to protect itself from the pirates, from illegal fishing that have really crippled the economy there, because larger countries with industrial fishing boats have come in and really fished out the Gulf, and which is what has created the problems with the fishing industry and created the pirates, because they didn't have any way to support themselves. And so we wanted to certainly cover the crisis side of these things, but also to look at the fact that the people of Somaliland are really attempting to invent a kind of new style of democracy within this otherwise really chaotic region. And it's not just Somalia. I mean, they're surrounded by these other failed states that, I mean, Sudan's nearby. You've got Eritrea nearby, and even the northern part of Ethiopia is basically, not governed in the same way that I guess we would usually think of. And so it's not just making a go of it in a difficult region. I mean, it's a virtually a lawless region that they're attempting to create something positive.
We're talking with Ted Genoways, the editor of the Virginia Quarterly Review. You can learn more online at vqronline.org. Based on all the reading you've done and the people you've talked with who've done this work, the photography and the fantastic reporting about what's going on in Africa right now, what's your response to somebody who says, look, I'm in America, I have so much to worry about, I'm worried about my country and my economy, what does Africa mean to me?
Right.
You know, what should Africa mean to us in America?
Well, maybe the most pressing thing that it should mean, I mentioned the training, the Al-Qaeda training camps in Yemen, and there's no question that the new region that Al-Qaeda is really moving into is North Africa. And that was the reason that we eventually expanded the whole issue to not just include the Horn, but to go all the way across the region and look at what the economic conditions are, what the environmental issues are that are making these countries really vulnerable to anyone who will come in with resources and an ideology. And, you know, for anyone who is skeptical about the importance of this region to the United States or to American foreign policy, I would encourage them just to look at, it's available free on our website, Marco Vernosky's story called The Cocaine Coast, which is set in the sort of ultra-small country of Guinea-Bissau, the sort of place that you know, I think most educated people would have a difficult time finding on a map. But it turns out that Guinea-Bissau is really the place that ever since the American government has made an effort to shut down cocaine trafficking in the Caribbean, it's gotten pushed and is mainly going through some of the islands off the coast of Guinea-Bissau. And that's where the Colombian cartels, it's where the Mexican cartels are shipping their cocaine that is bound for Europe. And the disturbing thing, I mean, that would be sort of bad enough, except that what's happening is that Al-Qaeda is also moving into that area. There are other terrorist groups, including Al-Maghreb, which is an African group that is associated with Al-Qaeda, and Hezbollah are getting involved in that area, funding their operations with the cocaine traffic. And it's becoming a site where FARC and the stronger of the Mexican cartels are suddenly on the ground directly involved with terrorist organizations that have an international network. And that should be of grave concern to everyone.
So North Africa is becoming the epicenter of international terrorism that threatens the United States.
Definitely so. I mean, this is where all of the drug money of the Western Hemisphere is meeting all of the sort of anti-American sentiment of the rest of the world. And that seems like a place that one should be paying attention to. And Guinea-Bissau is especially vulnerable right now because of the crazy circumstance that the military leader and the civil leader had an arrangement, a sort of off-the-books arrangement that though they totally despised each other, that that they would sort of leave each other alone. And part of the way that they enforced this, at least supposedly, was that if there was ever an attempt to assassinate one of them, that the other would be understood to have free pass to try to assassinate the other.
Oh, gosh.
And in point of fact, the military leader and the civilian leader were each successfully assassinated about 6 hours apart. And so Guinea-Bissau is, on top of all these other problems, it's operating also essentially without a government.
So based on what we're talking with Ted Genoese of the Virginia Quarterly Review, the new issue is out, and it's a special issue on North Africa. Based on what you've read and the people you've talked to, can you see a day when we're looking at the nightly news and they're talking about, you know, tens of thousands of American troops that are on the ground in North Africa?
Well, unfortunately, I think that that's a possibility if we don't try to do something about what's going on there right now. I mean, I think that the emergent spots are certainly Yemen and, like I said, all of the Horn. But I also think Guinea-Bissau is certainly one of those places, but really that whole coastline. And in fact, Mali is, you know, a country that I think one should be really paying attention to also. And in point of fact, we've got, not in this issue, but in an upcoming issue, an article that's about Al-Qaeda's moving into these very small villages in the middle of the desert, and they're really establishing trade routes across the desert so that they can move supplies.
Al-Qaeda's sort of, this thing is sort of like water in a balloon, you know? Yeah. You squeeze it in Afghanistan and it pops up in North Africa.
Well, and that's just the thing that's frustrating is that I'm no military strategist, but I can see that at the same time that we're focusing all this attention on very particular spots in the Middle East, and you know, in Afghanistan and in Asia Minor, we're ignoring everything that's going on in these other spots. And I think that's something we do at our own peril.
You can read more online at vqronline.org, the new issue of the Virginia Quarterly Review is now available. It's a special issue on the situation in North Africa. Got a couple of minutes left. I wanted to ask you, there's an article in this issue about elephants.
Yeah.
And the water supply that elephants in Africa are dying of thirst.
Yeah.
I've never heard of this.
Well, and this is this is one of the other sort of underlying things, is that at the same time, as I mentioned, that the coastlines are being really heavily fished out, the Sahara has also, over the last few decades, been expanding. And what it's done is effectively push the desert animals, as well as the nomad tribes, in this case, farther south. And what's happening in the case of these elephants in Mali is that they're being forced into areas where the humans are competing for the water also. And predictably, you know, it's possible to fence areas and to sort of protect against elephants coming into watering holes that are being used by communities that didn't, and communities of thousands of people that didn't exist just a few years ago. And so the elephants are literally, in this case of the desert herd, are wandering the desert looking for water and not finding it. And
there's a photograph in this issue, a really gripping photograph. I've never seen anything like this, of an elephant that just lying in the desert, just died of thirst.
That's right. Yeah, the distance has become so wide between the water holes that they literally just can't make it.
Because the desert is getting bigger in Africa.
It is.
The Sahara is expanding.
And the other problem is that some of the well-meaning projects, like digging wells for bringing water to some of these communities, has lowered the water table. And so that some of these lakes in the middle of the desert have just don't contain enough water to sustain the elephants. So, I mean, to me, as much as that's an issue, certainly for the elephants, and those herds need to be protected, it's also an indication of something much larger that's happening. I mean, that right now there's not enough water to sustain the elephants, but as this marches on, It doesn't seem to me it'll be very long before there's not enough water there to sustain the people who are there.
Ted Genoese is the editor of the Virginia Quarterly Review. You can check it out online at vqronline.org and get your copy of the winter edition. We'll be giving away a free copy here in just a couple of minutes. And folks can get this at Barnes & Noble and
definitely
local bookstores.
Yeah.
And we're going to get you back in here before the book festival, because I know you have a bunch of folks that you're bringing to town for the Virginia Book Festival.
That's
so
right.
We'll get you back in here to let folks know some of the things they can look forward to the end of March for the book festival.
Right.
Ted, thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you, Coy.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.